Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Sequoia, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Sequoia.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
I'm excellent, and I appreciate this opportunity to
speak
with you this evening.
Wonderful. You know, I appreciate it, and it's a miracle every week. And I don't know how I got so lucky, and here we are.
Isn't that the truth?
It is the truth.
Yes.
It's really great.
Yes.
It's great. Sequoia, what's it like to be at the monastery these days?
Well, what's it like to be at the monastery? You know, I have been looking at the fact that we are about to go into what I call hibernation mode. As we go into around here. The seasons are changing, and at a certain time of the year, we kind of wind down with the number of retreats that we offer for people at the monastery, and we start to focus more on things like the at-home working meditation retreat, so that people can join us on retreat from their climate-controlled home.
Yeah,
it's not that we don't love having people here, but you know, we cannot offer them the kind of climate control here at the monastery that most of us are used to out in the world.
Yes.
And it just made me think about how my relationship with nature has deepened in my time at the monastery, and how that has affected my practice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell us.
Yeah. You know, I think before I came to the monastery, much like I can speak for myself and my friends, it seemed like, you know, I knew that it was nature was out there. I loved nature. I loved wild things. But it seemed like I spent most of my time being transported and living in boxes, you know.
Yes.
Be from home to my car to work to my car to home.
Yes.
And if I wanted to know what phase the moon was in, I'd look at my watch, you know, or I'd check it on the calendar or something like that.
Yeah.
And there was always this little voice in the back of my head going, you know, someday I'm going to be present to every sunrise and sunset and, you know what phase the moon is in. And coming here to the monastery has really allowed me to be in touch with nature in that deeper way. And it has been so amazing, the gifts that it has brought to me in my life. I think that has just developed a deep gratitude for life and the abundance of life and the generosity of life and the gentleness of life. And, you know, I just, as I walk home every night from my hermitage and I look up, every night now I look up and see the stars and I see the moon and I know exactly what phase it's in, and I just feel this overwhelming appreciation for the beauty of this planet.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's very eloquent to me, Sequoia. And to me, it's so wonderful to have that opportunity to be in such close relationship with nature the way you've described it.
Yes, you know, and in all of the situations that are presented to me by, you know, nature, I am developing more of a sense of my own adequacy that we talk about in the practice.
Yes.
And I love particularly one day I was going home in the evening, and I encountered a large black bear.
Wow.
Now conditioning would have told me a lot of stories about what it was going to be like if I met a bear on the path. And the bottom line was I'd be eaten. And so just walking home one night, and there was the bear, you know. And what happened is the bear saw me, and the bear had absolutely no idea, or he did not want to interact with me. So he saw me and he ran as fast as he could through the woods. And it was just one of those experiences when the voices were proved wrong, you know, the
big
bear
surprise.
Was not lurking in the woods to eat me. And it was just another one of those times when I really just got to see my own adequacy.
It's great.
So,
it's great.
And
yeah, and to be in those circumstances where you're really required to see your own adequacy.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's, you know, and so far, life has not presented anything, nature has not presented anything that I'm not adequate to. And this summer we had a wonderful experience of having our first camping retreat.
Yes.
Oh, and we went with a group of people up into the into the higher elevations. I think we're up about 8,000 feet. And to just take a retreat up to that level and even get closer to nature, you know, to be in our tents. And we encountered some rain, and we encountered some cold weather, and we encountered incredible beauty. And it just made that retreat spectacular. All of the retreats are spectacular, but that one was just so special, and I think it was just being in that close proximity to the earth.
Yes. Yes. As you're talking, what occurs to me is, you know, yet another reason to come to the monastery to practice.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think I often get the sense that it's one of the things that people enjoy about being at the monastery is the natural surroundings and being able to be in the quiet and hear the birds. And it's hard to be identified when a butterfly is landing, you know, on your hand or cavorting around in front of you.
Yes.
And that's an amazing gift that nature provides here. You know, it just constantly pulls me back to the moment. And as I watch all the life around me, just, you know, being in joy and not worrying about what's going to happen, you know, in an hour from now. And I'm going to take this opportunity to just give a little ad and say that we are going to have our new retreat schedule up on the website very soon, we hope.
Great.
And I think I saw something about another camping retreat coming up.
Oh, my goodness.
So, folks, you know, the hardy types may want to look into that, but there will be many retreats that people can choose from just to come here to the monastery and just be in this beauty.
Great. So that'll be up on the web soon, and that'll take us into 2011.
That will take us into 2011, so we can all get together and start our practice plan for 2011.
Yes. Yes. Now, if that's a new concept for some listeners, do you want to take a moment or two and say what a practice plan is?
Oh, it's a practice plan is something that we started this year where people could participate via the phone. And we all got together and really looked at laying out our practice goals for the year, and so that, you know, just really looking at how we wanted to support ourselves with practice through the year and looking at the opportunities that would be available to do that. And so, you know, just really making that a priority and getting it down before conditioning could come in and, you know, sprinkle stupid dust on us and help us to, you know, sign up for this retreat, but to really make it a conscious decision to, and this is how I'm going to support myself for the coming year, and this is how I'm going to participate.
Great. Yeah, the power of conscious intention and commitment.
Absolutely.
Very, very exciting. Sequoia, it's been a great pleasure to talk with you tonight.
Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Oh, you are so welcome.
All right.
Take care.
I look forward to the radio show. I'm going to go listen.
Okay, good.
Okay. Bye.
Hi.
Michael.
Hi. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
Great. Yourself?
Good. Stand warm.
Ah.
Stand warm.
Well, No, okay, good. Well, I'm in the land that Sequoia was describing. So, sitting here looking out at how incredibly beautiful nature is, and feeling extremely grateful to be alive.
Yes, 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 and it's great to be in that place, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's funny when I hear you folks talk about like the bears and, you know, the all of that sort of thing. I can just see people going, "Oh no." I do not want to be walking down a path, and what if my bear didn't run in the opposite direction? But it's good. It's good to. I think sometimes when we make peace with what we think of as nature, all of the natural critters and the natural beauty and that sort of thing, it helps us to understand our own nature and how we are not different from that. See ourselves with a bit more appreciation and loving kindness and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh. The oneness that's there.
I know the part of me that's a rattlesnake. I know the part of me that lumbers around like a black bear.
Yes, yes. Well, that's a fun projection exercise, isn't it?
Yeah, and the cute little jackrabbit that runs down the road in front of you and keeps looking back over its shoulder and the deer and, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Barry, I see a list here that's very long of where you will be.
Yes.
You will be this Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. at Integral Yoga Institute in New York City.
One of my favorite places in the world.
Great. I'll have to go there if I get
lovely
to New York City.
Lovely, lovely, lovely people. Yes.
Great. On Friday, October 29th at 7:30 p.m., you'll be at the Open Secret Bookstore in San Rafael.
Mm.
And on November 6th, you'll be doing a workshop in San Diego. And a week later, on the 13th, you'll be in San Jose offering another workshop at the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment. Not soon after that, on November 18th at 7:30, that's a Thursday, you'll be at East West Bookstore in Mountain View.
Home week.
Home week, yes. Followed by a workshop at the Mountain View Zen Center on December 12th.
Yes, and in between there, I go to Seattle on, I think it's a Thursday night, December the 9th.
Great.
Or, they have an East West Bookstore up there as well. More lovely people.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
People are in that part of the world.
And to cap it all off, another, I think this is perhaps the third annual New Year's retreat in San Rafael at San Damiano, December 27th to January 1st. No, I got the name wrong. Santa Sabina.
I was going to say, really? That doesn't sound right. Yeah, don't go to that other place. Go to
don't
Santa
go to
Sabina.
The other place. That's what happens when you start reading what's not on the paper.
Right. Yeah, that is a very well, you know, it's a really special retreat. So, I hope if people don't make it anywhere else, they make it to that one.
Great, great. And, Sherry, we have some callers here. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Elizabeth. I'm in Cleveland.
Hi, Elizabeth.
How are you?
I'm doing good, and yourself?
Oh, I want so much to say I'm just fine.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, you want to say more about that, or?
It's coming on the anniversary of my son's death, which is 5 years ago. It'll be 5 years.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. And I'm in Cleveland, and which is where I grew up, and it's dark here, Sherry. I can see Cleveland, the lights and everything across Lake Erie. I mean, across a little, area of Lake Erie. And it's so beautiful. The lights kind of twinkle when it's windy. And I love looking at the lake. It's like it's always coming, you know, but it's always moving. It's never the same, but it is always Lake Erie. And
gosh, we could say that about life.
I know. And there are so many days when I do say that about life. And when I got here, which is about, I've been coming back and forth here from California for about a year and a half. Well, actually 2 years, but into this place. That was it for me. I mean, it was just, you know, I just sat in that window and looked at the lake for months. And it really was, it was so great. But right now, today, it's not working. You know, I took a walk in the woods, and I was real attracted to the combination of life and death, and took lots of pictures of, you know, dead trees among the living and trees that have red and yellow and green leaves all at the same time, and things like that. And I thought, why is this so beautiful and so acceptable to me when it's trees and rocks and things like that, but not when it is living the life and living next to a death of my son? Is just feels, again, impossible to me. And so since I what I practice is what I have. I was thinking about that when I called, because I haven't finished reading the book, but I you know, I have let's see, a glass of wine. Oh, I bought some cigarettes, and today I got a cat. And you know, the wine and the cigarettes don't quite work for me. I'm not sure about the cat yet. And I just abandon my meditation at every turn. I just think I'll just do that later.
So if you were describing somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Who is doing what I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'd say, well, here's a person who has all the tools and still wants to pound the nail in with her fist.
And what would you say would be the motivation in that? What is that, as the British novels would say, what is that in aid of?
Yeah, what's in it for me? Well, one thing that's in it for me is, here's a good way to describe it. I had another car, and on the bumper of that car, I had Inner Peace, World Peace as a bumper sticker. And I got to tell you, people screamed at me when I had that bumper sticker. I mean, I was in California at the time. People here are much kinder, or they act much more polite. I don't know if they're kinder. They're just more polite.
And what kind of things would they scream?
They'd scream when they couldn't cut in front of me, and then they would tailgate me to where I was going and drive up next to me and say, "Inner peace, world peace," like that meant I should move over for them. You know, when clearly I was in the right way. And I didn't, you know, feel like it. It wasn't a road rage thing until this person had that reaction. And it happened to me twice in that kind of very adamant way. And I don't know how many other times when people just couldn't, you know, shove me aside and put their car in my position. But so I'm afraid of being, I'm afraid of being nice, you know. I'm afraid I'll, like people will just go, "Oh, she is so boring."
Uh-huh. So now we went from Are you following the progression here?
No.
Okay. Well, we started out with pounding a nail in with your fist and ended up
yeah.
with a fear of being boring.
Right. And I mean, isn't there something about trying to nail something with your fist that's kind of
well,
exciting?
Here's the thing that I would suggest. There's only one thing that I know of that would be interested in that whole projection.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But no, you go ahead. More important for you to get there than me in this particular case.
Conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Karmic conditioning.
Yeah.
Egocentric karmic conditioning, to be specific.
Don't you think? So
oh, well,
we started out with a woman who lost her son in a really painful, difficult way.
As if they were a good way to lose your son.
Well, you know,
okay, you're right.
Yeah, there are.
It was sudden. It was a
easier
car accident.
Yeah,
there was no goodbye.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So, and then what she has managed to have for herself since then sounds like a kind of a descent into. A whole lot of things that don't take care of her.
Ooh, a whole lot.
Well,
oh, you mean like
I don't,
like
I don't know
wine and cigarettes. You're talking about that list.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, maybe those are, you know, health aids, but possibly not. I'm not sure about the cat. That could be a grand and glorious thing or not.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But don't get to meditate,
yeah.
you know, pounding nails with a fist, being taken to making a connection that inner peace, world peace is something that indicates someone is nice, which will mean they're boring. And not only that, it makes people violent. I mean, these are a lot of interesting, to me, really interesting things to put together. And I'm going to just go out on a limb here and suggest none of it sounds terribly centered.
Well, are you mad at me?
No.
What?
No, are you?
No. Well, yeah, I guess I am. Yeah, no, I'm,
don't,
no.
Don't you
well,
think,
no,
yeah.
I'm doing the best I can,
well,
Sherry.
Well, but let's just stop with that projection, okay?
Okay.
If Freud were here.
Yeah,
I think we could all guess that was one of those.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
oh, sure.
I am sure that there is an Elizabeth who is doing the very best that she can do, but
yeah.
I'm not here to believe that not being allowed to meditate, drinking wine, smoking cigarettes, deciding inner peace, world peace is a bad direction, and being worried about being boring. Those don't seem like things that are going to be supportive of her ability to care for herself.
Well, I mean, you're not boring.
Well, the jury is kind of out on that, but but I agree with you. I actually find me fascinating. Howsoever.
Well, oh, and isn't, oh, okay, yeah. I find myself quite good company, actually,
yes,
since I've been here largely on my own.
And
I would suggest
that
yes.
when that is the case, you are probably closer to center than closer to somebody who just went through that list of activities with me.
Okay.
So for a long time, it sounds like being there with the water, being soothed by the water, being soothed by the watching the lights as they flickered in the wind and that sort of thing brought a level of peace to you.
Yeah, and I have a studio. I'm working in the studio.
Yeah,
and I'm trying.
And then the information you got was, this is not working any longer. Okay?
Well,
now, I'm going to suggest something else for you.
Okay.
How can you be all right walking around in the woods, seeing trees go through the sequence of life and death, and not be all right with that when it's people? That was your question, right? But it was actually, I'm going to suggest, a more specific question even than that. It's how could you be all right with it with trees, but not with your son?
My son, because, I mean, it destroyed the universe for me, you know. He was supposed to be around when I died, not the other way around.
That's right. Now, this could have been, and I think for a long time was, an opportunity for you to come back to yourself, get to center, to see how life worked, to learn to find compassion for yourself no matter what, to have a growing compassion for other people and the suffering that they are experiencing and enduring.
Well, maybe this is just an opportunity for my huge ego to take front and center stage, you know, and say, oh, feel sorry for me. It's 5 years.
Well, I would go along with you if you will delete my from that sentence, because I don't think the egocentric karmic conditioning that is trying to ruin your life currently is something that you need to own.
Okay. All right. So when that, oh boy.
So if you're walking around in those woods, I wish I knew more about botany and those sorts of things, but I don't. So when you're walking around in those woods outside of Cleveland, I imagine that those trees, if they're anything like the trees here, have parasites that live on them. They have Spanish moths.
I suppose
moths
they do. You know, the other thing they have, I visited this area right near where I got the cat, where you could come and cut your own wood. And so they have huge trees here. You've been back east. They're huge trees. That for some reason the trunks of the trees are there, and some of them are perfectly perfect looking on the outside, and the inside has just been destroyed with carpenter ants, or a rot or something, you know. And so there's this life and death. Everything looks all right from the outside, which is a great symbol for my personal life.
That's right. So, if those trees stood around and took those ants personally and wanted to take ownership for the fact that those ants are doing that, or that those, we would say, now that is really unnecessary / silly. Okay? So in the same way, we need to take a little step back and let go of this willingness to take personally something that really has nothing to do with you, so that you can get back to taking care of that woman who really is open to support and guidance and understanding and expansive awareness. And
boy.
And
all right.
One other thing about it, egocentric karmic conditioning is not going to be excited about that plan. So you need to prepare yourself for it to kick up a storm, possibly like nothing you've seen for a really long time.
Yeah, I'm getting better at yelling stop, but for some reason this didn't sound like a voice to me.
Yeah, well, it was one of those insidious little campaigns that it started.
It was a campaign. It is a campaign.
Yes.
It was a campaign.
It starts with things like a quiet little reflection, a little musing that, gosh, this just isn't working in the same way. You know, nobody's in a panic. You know, it's not violent or forceful. It's just really somebody who's concerned about helping you see that this just really isn't working for you the way it used to. And as soon as you turn your attention to it, it's got you and you're headed down the...
Yeah, I can feel that, like when somebody tells me what their son is doing now, or how one of Alex's friends has a new girlfriend or a job, or, you know, you know, and I've been able to resist that road pretty much. Not resist, but like go, okay, that's a road.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
identify that and say, okay, I'm not going there. I'm not,
sure.
I don't. I don't need to be envious of people who have roads.
I'm sure you've heard the story of the young woman who came to the Buddha carrying the body.
Yeah.
Okay. And, of course, the point of that story is it happens to all of us.
Yeah.
It's part of being human.
She knocked on every door.
Yeah. It's our best opportunity to expand our definition of mine.
Of what?
Of mine.
M-I-N-E?
M-I-N-E. Until there is nothing that doesn't fit into that definition.
It's all mine.
It's all mine.
Or none of it's mine.
Yes. Well, these are all my children. This is all my forest. This is all my ocean. This is all, it's all mine. It's not that's mine and that isn't. Because that's the world of duality, the world of suffering. And you're right. You can do it either way. It's just, in my experience, making it all mine is really a happier approach.
Yeah, it feels richer, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's rich.
Yeah, I want to participate.
Okay. And all right.
Let me know. Work on this for a little while, and then give me a call back and let me know how you're doing, okay?
Oh, well, thanks, Sherry.
You are so very welcome.
By the way, oh, well, never mind. I'll let you go. You probably have several dozen other callers.
I suspect that that is the case.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Kiss the kitty cat for me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we are going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
By Trish Bruxford Colligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello.
Next caller, are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
Sherry, hi, it's Jonathan.
Jonathan, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. What's going on?
Well, I've had a breakthrough. I think it's a breakthrough, anyway.
Okay.
If it's not, you'll just have to humor me because it feels like one.
Uh-huh.
Well, what's been happening is that something kept bringing me down and bringing me down each time I was kind of going forward.
And I suspect we know what that was.
Yeah, but I couldn't see exactly what it was. And what it was that I was sitting one day in a bad mood, and I was just thinking, you know, I need so much spiritual help, you know, I need so much more than this practice, and I need more friends, I need more of this, and suddenly realized that it was all conditioning, you know, none of it was me. And it might not, I know it doesn't sound like a very big breakthrough, but for me it was massive.
Oh, I, Jonathan, trust me, I know exactly how massive it was. I can remember the moment that I had a similar kind of breakthrough, and I happened to be in a grocery store doing shopping for the monastery where I was training, and I had to sit down on the floor because my legs would not hold me up. So, yes, I do understand how big those kinds of breakthroughs can be, even though when you say it as words, it's like, okay, good.
Yeah, exactly. It's like trying to find a way to put it across, isn't it?
Yes, you know? Yes. But that, you see, is the good news about talking to people who know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it so much easier because you can say that, and I can. It just takes me right to my experience of that. Now, is it exactly the same? No, of course not. But it's close enough that you don't have to waste a lot of time trying to convince me that this was massive for you. You just have to say, I got this. It was massive. I'm right there.
No, it was a huge relief because one thing I've done since I started this in May, it's like I've allowed it to sort of drag me around everywhere. Like I've been to Quaker meetings, I've been to AA, I've stopped drinking, I've started again, I've stopped smoking, I've started again. And I was kind of, you know, doing all these things on the basis of, I'm going to see something.
Uh-huh.
Which is exactly what happened. And the thing that really surprised me is that the thing that I cut out that really made a difference was caffeine.
Uh-huh.
Which was the complete opposite of what conditioning was telling me. You know, it's telling me, well, if you want this to work, you're going to have no alcohol, no cigarettes, no junk food. You're going to have to meditate every day. And I've done a kind of big mix of things, meditation, and I did stop drinking for 6 weeks. But the only thing that actually made a big difference at this stage was no caffeine, and I feel really calm much more of the time.
And do you know why that's the case?
Well, I know I had a look for the first time at how caffeine works on the body. I mean, that's one of the reasons.
And karma ties itself to sensations in the body.
Yeah, and that's what was happening. That's what really was happening. Like I'd get these stressful, tense sensations, and everything became a bit more believable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is why conditioned mind is constantly talking people into doing the very thing that is going to enable conditioned mind to stay in control. So it says, of course it says don't meditate. And of course it wants you constantly to be looking to see how you're feeling and then, oh, you need something to rev yourself up. Oh, you need something to calm yourself down. Oh, you need some sugar because that's what's going to... And, you know, the whole Western world and as quickly as possible, the rest of the world is getting on board with that kind of information. And it's exactly the opposite of what we want to be doing if we want to stop suffering, which actually technically very few people want to do.
Well, I'm suffering a lot less.
Good.
I keep having these breakthroughs. I mean, I remember at the start, you know, I mean, I work in television, and I remember you talking about television and thinking to myself, I'm never going to agree with her about this, but I won't say anything. And now I'm kind of starting to see the industry that I work in a completely different way. And
yeah.
I'm just surprised at the kind of the... like the profundity of what's going on.
Now, this is a good point for me to jump in and say, don't let conditioned mind start making conclusions out of your awarenesses and get you on a program of what it's telling you you need to do. So you have an awareness about television as an industry. And as soon as you have that awareness, it's going to jump over on the other side of, okay, well, now you need to quit. You can't work there anymore. If now that you've seen what's going, okay, just go, no. This is not about doing something.
No, it is kind of raising those things, but I'm not. Because I've done all these experiments, you call them experiments in truth, don't you?
Well, Gandhi, I borrowed that from him because it's such a great picture of what it is that we're doing. But yes, try this, you see what happens. You do that,
yeah.
You see what happens.
Yeah, it's very much like that because I thought that, for example, I projected that, okay, well, I'm going to give up alcohol and I'm going to give up cigarettes and that's going to have a great big effect. But actually, I found that a bit sort of boring almost. And then when I gave up the caffeine, that was a revelation. But conditioning had never mentioned coffee or diet drinks to me. So it is an experiment in truth because
mm-hmm.
you're being fed. I'm being fed this information and not the. It's not what's happening. It's not what happens in the event.
Which is why, of course, those voices have to be so persistent. Because they're trying to convince people of stuff that isn't true. And the only time you have to be that kind of persistent is if you're trying to get somebody to believe a lie. If it's something that's true, a campaign doesn't need to happen because people will simply realize it on their own. Get a sense of that?
I do, and I know that's been discussed quite a lot on the archive. Like, why are you constantly being told that you're depressed or you can't function, are you? Because it's not true.
Because it's not true. And we can see that in the conditioned world, just everywhere.
Yeah, I think that at the moment that's my only disappointment because I can't kind of find anybody who's open to hearing about this stuff. And on the one hand, it fascinates me. And I think, well, it's really actually what they want to do with their lives. It's got nothing to do with me. But I also, it sort of astonishes me that I'm kind of saying to people, there's a way out of your suffering. And they're like, not really interested.
Oh, precisely. And it's, for me, it's one of those things that it's important to accept without making it mean anything, because otherwise it can be incredibly disappointing and sort of alienating. You know, to realize that people want to talk about their suffering endlessly, but when offered a way out, are not interested because it'll be boring or Where will the juice come from, or whatever it is that's going on. So for me, it's it takes a lot of the pressure off to save people.
Exactly right. Yeah, it's like I had the experience at Alcoholics Anonymous because I don't know whether a voice told me that I was an addict or a hopeless addict or something like that, and I just thought, like, well, okay, I'll take you to Alcoholics Anonymous, let's find out. And then when I got there, I was, like, immediately indoctrinated with all these ideas from them. I mean, I don't want to criticize Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was seeing it in a completely different way. It's like they wanted me to say that I was an addict, and I was just sitting there thinking, well, this is one of my experiments in awareness. But I didn't really have to say anything. I just went a few times and thought, well, I'm not having any difficulty living without alcohol, so I'm probably not an addict.
And well, and And yeah, that's an interesting place of being able to just be all right with it as it is. I don't mean where you are with that whole program, because, of course, from my perspective, the real addiction that we need to have programs for is to ego. But I bet they wouldn't be quite as popular. So to be able to just go and listen and benefit in whatever way, and then see where you're led next. One of the things that I would like to say at this juncture is that over the years of awareness practice, I have let go of a ton of stuff, but I've never given up anything.
Yeah, you know, that was one of your sentences that stayed with me, actually.
Good. Yeah. It's a really critical distinction, and it's one that egocentric karmic conditioning just hates.
Well, why? Why does it hate it?
Because putting you on a program, getting you to try something and fail, is a
right.
huge part of how it keeps control.
I probably could have guessed that for myself if I thought about it a little bit.
Pardon me?
I probably could have guessed that for myself listening back, but
yeah.
Of course it sets you up to fail, of course.
Yes, yes, and then beats you up. So gives you a program to get onto, make sure that you don't do it, beats you up, and there you are right back at the beginning again. I mean, we hear people talk about that endlessly with everything. Alcohol, cigarettes, junk food, caffeine, you know, dieting, money. What a name a piece of content. And that's the process that conditioned mind has people involved in. If you this, then it that. If you that, then that. Okay, so you're this way. You need to be that way. We're going to make sure that you're not there. You're a failure. And it proves what we told you in the beginning, which is why we have to simply lose interest in the conversation. The only way out of it.
Well, I mean, to come full circle to what I started with, I have this honeymoon period with reading your books and meditating and exploring this, and everything seemed to go well, and then everything turned very dark.
Yes.
And I was amazed to find that it was just as simple as believing lines like, you know, this process isn't going fast enough, you know.
Yes. Anytime.
Because
this is how subtle it actually is. As soon as your attention turns to it, it creates what seems like, to the conditioned person, a very small gap. But you could drive the entire world through that aperture. So it's the shift of attention to this isn't going fast enough, and if you're not paying very, very, very close attention, you're lost for a really long time. All right. Well.
Thank you, Sherry.
You are so welcome, sir. I'm happy for you and your breakthrough. Happy that you're not drinking caffeine. It'll be good to get that on, I imagine you're going to get a copy of What You Practice Is What You Have, I bet. And when you do that and it talks you through making that recording, that's going to be one of the things that goes on your recording, is a reminder that no matter how they try to talk you into drinking caffeine would be a good idea, you know it isn't. You know the difference for you. Maybe someday you'll be able to and you'll choose to, but right now, the experiment that you're doing is watching the sensations in your body when you're not all wound up on caffeine.
I look forward to that. That sounds good.
Good.
We'll have a wonderful show.
Thank you, Jonathan. Good night.
All right. Good night, Sherry.
Thanks for joining us, Jonathan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Always great to hear breakthrough, Sherry.
It is. It's. Yeah, it's the best. It encourages all of us.
Yeah.
Practice does work, no matter how it looks in a bad moment. It does work, and if we stay with it, stay connected with Sangha, stay on the program. You know, it's going to turn around and those breakthroughs will be ours.
Yes, indeed. Sherry, we're going to hear from Sangha Market and an extremely helpful message, and then we'll be right back.
Right. Thank you.
What's this from Living Compassion?
If you've got a craving for fundraising and can't get enough of the good stuff, cruise and jet on the internet to www.sanghamarket.com.
That's sanghamarket.com for all of you squares out there.
Sangha Market, where you can sell, auction, buy, all to benefit Living Compassion. Check it out today.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by VoiceBusters Incorporated, purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, Michael.
Yes.
I got in the mail today a little note from Awareness Junkie Man.
Oh, wow.
This is how lucky I am.
From the original Awareness.
It was an autographed picture.
Oh, wow.
Now, how does somebody like that have time to actually send these out? I do not know. But what I learned, that I think you probably learned also, is that he raised over $10,000 at the Bridge Walk.
Wow.
For the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
That is amazing.
Isn't that astounding? And so here is my, well, first of all, I am hoping that Awareness Junkie Man will take on Sangha Market in the same way he took on the Bridge Walk. I don't know. I'm just putting it out there and hoping. But I want to make it a priority for myself. Next year is the 10th annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk. And I am hoping that it's going to be just the celebration of the year, with everybody who has ever been to a bridge walk coming, everybody who's ever thought about coming to a bridge walk coming, everybody who just heard about the possibility of coming to a bridge walk being there. All of us getting together and just seeing if we can, using Awareness Junkie Man as our role model for what's possible, just put that whole thing right over the top and make sure that folks in that community don't ever have to worry about eating again.
Wow.
There.
That's a great vision.
I'm hoping you that the two of us can remember at least once a month or whatever it is, to encourage people to put October 1st, 2011 on their calendar so that we can all be there for the giant Golden Gate Bridge Walk Festival.
It's going to be a big deal.
It's going to be big. And we'll be there.
We'll be there. I'm looking forward.
We hope.
Wonderful. Thank you for that, Sherry. And we have another caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yay! It's Holly from Australia.
Yes! How long have you been
on
hold?
I'm so glad to get through. It's like the third week running. Oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness.
Hi!
It's great to hear your voice. How are you doing? What's going on?
Can I say a special hello to all of Sangha and the monks on the West Porch?
Yes, I bet they're all smiling and waving in the general direction of Australia.
Yay. Well, yeah, it's great to listen to the shows each week on the phone. It's all kind of live. It makes it more exciting.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, because I've been waiting, but it's just like, of course, everybody asks what I'm going to ask, and so I hear what I needed to hear.
I was just going to thank you for staying on anyway, because the temptation is to listen to a voice that says, oh, you know, you don't have anything to say. They've already said it. Just be quiet. And we never want to listen to that voice. So good job.
No. I've had a little, a breakthrough myself. I've been reading There Is Nothing Wrong With You again, and I kind of find every time I read one of these books, you know, on a rotation, I see it differently or something new.
Yes, because you're different.
I think so. And what I was reading last night was The Circles with the Personality, Self-Hate, Fear, True Nature.
Uh-huh.
And so, because I've been having a lot of problems sleeping and nightmares and stuff, and I have to use this as an opportunity, because especially with the nightmares, like, it feels fairly uncontrollable. And so I've just been practicing all night, meaning like I wake up, and what happened last night was just really seeing how the fear, the self-hate and the fear was really blocking me from experiencing what is. And I just saw it. And then I went to sleep, and I hadn't, like, it's almost like it was upping the ante. I had this terrible nightmare about my family, and then I woke up, and I just went, I'm not going to buy it. You know, and I just felt really good. And then I went back to sleep, and I had another nightmare. It was awful. And then I just woke up and went, and I feel like I bought it for like 5 seconds, and I'm like, no, I'm not, like, I see what you're doing, you know, it's not okay. And yeah, it feels, so I kind of just ringing up to just share that and get some sort of a cheerleading squad happening, because I'm on the right track.
Yeah, yes, of course you are. And which you know, right? Because they're on the run. You know, that whole system is in a state of panic, and as you say, upping the ante. Now, are you in a position where you could have something playing all night?
I actually have had my iPod. I sleep with my iPod, and I listen to reassurances and CDs. Sometimes I sleep with it in my ear, especially last night.
And does that seem to help, or do you suspect that that's what's pushing it kind of to this crisis point?
Both. Like, it super helps, like, especially if I wake up startled and it's still playing in my ear, so straight away I'm getting this be kind to yourself than you think you should be. So it's kind of funny. But, yeah, also because I'm practicing so dedicated at the moment, it's pushing me against the wall, and I'm feeling it, and I get hooked by that. But last night I thought, I see what you're doing. I'm getting so hooked because it's putting it up to 11, you know.
And
yeah,
what does that mean? What do you think is going to happen, or what could happen? What's the worst that could happen?
That I just believe it, and I stay feeling terrible forever and ever, and that's one of the stories.
Which, of course, you know is not true.
When I'm identified, I know it's not true.
Yeah.
So, and actually, I'm seeing, even when it's happening now, a little bit more that it can't be true.
Right.
It's been proven it's not true.
That's right. Because you and I both know that if it could put you in a position of leaving you in suffering forever, it would have already done it.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, because the stakes have been this high any number of times, And what it does is threaten, and then there's a break. And you go off, and it goes off, and then it comes back in again, threaten. But it can never, it never delivers. It can't. It can do it to you again. But that's not the same as it can do to you what it says it's going to do to you. All it can do is repeat the process that it's always done. That's one of those. I hope everybody who's listening to this will kind of trust me on that. If it could do anything worse, it would have.
Yeah, but life's just got better.
Precisely. And so it screams louder, or it screams as loud as it can scream, and it'll try to scream more often if somebody will give it the attention. But that's all it can do.
Which I do sometimes.
Yeah, that's all that it can do. That's its entire arsenal.
Yeah. I think for me, what's most liberating about this understanding is that it's everything that it says that isn't compassionate is the fear and self-hate. Like everything.
Yeah.
Everything, or even the stuff about planning for tomorrow because I'm going to be tired.
Yes.
Which feels functional, but it's not. It's actually just making me more feeling like I'm in control because I'm scared.
Precisely. Yes. Yes, and that you're in relationship with it. You know, it's funny, but, and I'm sure you know this from your own experience, you're against it. Against it. You identify and go with it, and there's a little bit of relief in not fighting it any longer.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's how it keeps folks captive, because it talks you into giving up and going with it. And it is true. There is that momentary relief. But it's relief that feeds it.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, it's like the relief is like saying something like, well, actually, this is the truth, so just accept it. And you go, oh, okay.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so then you get a little respite, right?
Yeah.
And it's what's resting. And then it has the strength to come after you again. So, you know, in all the stories with the big guys, and gals, they get to that point and then just start pushing, right? So when it gets to the place of, I can't stand it, that's when you put the pedal to the metal and go full blast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
this is the encouragement, I need to hear, because there is a fear now that I will lose this kind of momentum?
Yeah, which is what it's hoping, what it's going
right
for. So, you know, the other thing that early on when we were talking with Elizabeth, there's the, why don't you do this? This will take care of you. Why don't you go on a trip? Why don't you get a cat? Why don't you start a new hobby? Why don't you buy a new car? Why don't you, and we can get enthusiastic or excited about whatever that is, and that's giving it the rest time that it needs to reinforce its campaign. And the way we can prove that is, because there's no problem with any of that. You know, those all be great things to do, depending on where they come from. But if they're coming from being in relationship with conditioned mind, then we very quickly hit a place of, well, that didn't work. Well, why did you do that? Now look what you've done. Now you've... Okay? So the rest...
Because the action's coming from that fear.
That's right. And
that conditioned mind.
Yeah. So the relief is there. And all it's doing is, well, you know, I'm going out and test driving cars. It's over there rearming itself for the next time my attention slips and it comes
mm-hmm.
in with the next campaign. And people,
mm-hmm.
over time, just get worn down. So
yeah.
that's why in practice it's so important to get that the only thing that actually takes care of us is kindness from the human to the human.
Right.
It's the only thing that makes us happy. It's the only thing that makes us feel better. It's the only thing that is satisfying. That's it. Not I'll do X and then I'll feel Y. No. If I do X, I'll feel X. If I do
mm-hmm.
Y, I'll feel Y. So if
mm-hmm.
I want to be happy, gosh, I should write a book on this subject, huh? and that's the whole point. You know, what you practice is what you have. If you want not to be afraid of those voices, you have to
mm-hmm.
practice not being afraid of those voices.
Okay.
How do you do that? You talk to the person who gets afraid, and you begin to take care of and reassure that person so that those hateful, fear-mongering voices can't get to that person.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm writing this down because I don't have broadband. I won't be able to listen back, so this is good. Thank you.
You what? What about listening back?
Oh, I don't have broadband, so I can't listen to it back.
Hmm.
So I'm writing it down as we go, and I can read it later. But I can always go to a friend's house and figure it out at some point. You know, I'm not the techno person down here.
Yeah, wow. Well, that's too bad, because having access to the archives would be a really big support for you.
Well, I do if I go to friends' houses and stuff, but I haven't been doing that much lately, so.
Well, it might be a good
time. But I've been ringing and listening. It's the same thing.
Good.
I have a telephone.
Yeah. That worked out well.
Okay, so practice not being afraid of the voices and mentoring to the one who is.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm.
So, and that's the conversation that you stay in all the time. Now, of course, conditioning would say, well, that's boring, to just walk around saying something like, it's okay, I'm here with you, there's nothing to be afraid of, we're fine. It's okay, I'm here with you, there's nothing to be afraid of, those voices can't get you, I'm going to take care of you, I'm gonna protect
mm-hmm.
you. You know, and that's it. That's the sum total of the conversation that goes on in your head. Now, again, conditioned mind is going to say, well, you're going to be exciting. You know, people are really going to want to be around you. They're going to really want to talk to you. Well, actually, they will. Much more so than if you're walking around in a conversation with conditioned mind about what's wrong with you and what's wrong with them and what's wrong with it.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Got a plan.
Yes.
Good.
And it's just, I mean, it's just so great to touch base. I mean, that's huge for me.
Oh, yeah. It's huge. It's why the Buddha, we could, you know, at least just about everybody in this conversation is going to agree, this is one of the most powerful, brilliant, compassionate, loving, aware, awake human beings ever to grace this planet. And
mm-hmm.
when he set it up for us so that it would continue after he died, he set up Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes, awakening, great, grand and glorious thing. It's who we are, and it's what we're realizing. And there's a process for doing that. You know, there are ways that it all works, and we can get in alignment with those, and there are the people that we're going to do that with.
Yeah.
One, equally important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very important to touch base.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Be talking to
Thank
you, next
you
week.
Michael. Thank you, Sherry.
You're welcome, Holly. Even if I don't hear your voice, I'll know you're there.
I'm so here.
Yeah. Good.
Great.
Care. Thanks.
I'll see you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Holly. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
another miracle hour.
It sure feels like it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Being with Sangha, it's true. There's just nothing better.
It's great.
Thank you for arranging it all for us, Michael.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for being here in every way that you do that.
You're welcome. Let's do it again next week.
Okay, great. Thanks, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.